Hello. Good afternoon to everybody here. Good morning, or hopefully not good middle of the night to folks out on the internet. I am so obnoxiously excited to be here with you all today. And I'm going to talk to you about multilingual speech technologies for a global world, which is a bit like saying ATM machine, global world. Be like, oh, it's a world. Be like, it's kind of the point. My name is Jess, and I work for the Common Voice Project over at the Mozilla Foundation. I am absolutely needlessly intense about Birmingham being the best British city. For folks watching on the video, I'm the only one mic'd, but somebody just like exclaimed a cheer of agreement. I'm also really excited about communication and human languages. I'm really bad at learning languages and I have no self-control. Please, please do not talk to me after this and tell me anything interesting about your language. You will ruin my summer. Please, please, please don't. We're going to be talking about data and models and multilingual models. So the first thing I wanted to do was just go ahead and make the nod to AI hype. Are these models going to change the world? Are these part of Gen AI? Is this the most important thing? Are they going to replace programmers? Joyously, this is so far above my pay grade that I just get to sort of nod and bop along. In a non-editorial way, though, I'd like to suggest that maybe we could talk about something practical and useful. I want to talk to you about multilingual speech technologies. And I want to talk to you about speech technologies because hopeful technology in 2025 feels a little bit rare. So I'd love to see if we can all be excited together. If any of you are eventually going to be building some of these, I'd love to kill any excuses you may have to not make them linguistically inclusive. But for those of you who are using these speech technologies, I'd love for you to be really, really aggressive out in the world about why doesn't this understand me, and why doesn't this understand people who aren't like me? Speech technologies are so boring. They are joyously boring. Almost all of them have terrible diagrams, and this was my favorite one, which is quite good. A research team of Arshalan, Iman, Ramsey, and Allen did this really fantastic one, which I think walks us through how ASR, automatic speech recognition, and speech-to-text, turning speech waveforms into a type of input a computer can recognize and act on. So we've got a bucket, because that's how we like our data, just in a cylinder, of transcribed speech data. So that's going to be clips of people talking, and then text associated with that. And that gets built into a model to say, hey, when you hear these waveforms, it's associated with these words, this orthography. And then we've got text data that also feeds into models for what we think that's likely to be saying, and a model for pronunciation. So in this dialect, in this language, how are things pronounced? When a speaker comes to a speech technology, the technology will extract out the features. Usually, we'll get a cool look at the shape of those words. And all three of these models are going to feed into a decoder. And the thing I love best is human speech is messy. Human speech is wild. Even in the best of times, speech technologies, automatic speech recognition is going to spit out hypothesized text. What we think that person said. Is anybody Scottish? Cool. This works better or worse in some languages, and this works better and worse for some accents and variants and dialects. I'm not picking on Scottish people, they just seem to have the hardest time for... Speech technologies just really aren't voice assistants. When I give this talk in other types of mainstream conferences, I love to ask, like, hey, who uses those little things that live in your house and totally don't listen to you when you don't use the keywords? So who uses speech assistants, voice assistants, or those? Oh, cool. Okay. I mean, I'm...
You know
Me too. I would definitely do the... But the so speech technologies are boring, but they're also not just Siri or Alexa. They're really, really things that are often exciting. So they're not perfect, but real-time interpretation applications are magical feeling. I've seen them used to gather and share livestock disease information for pastoral farmers, used for remote medical services platforms. So the ability to say, hey, I'm bleeding really bad, what can I do? Can be quite good when you don't have both hands free at the moment. Used in assistive technologies, which I absolutely love, powers the automatic transcriptions we're seeing more and more on videos for whatever value that's worth. And really, at the end of the day, anytime you talk to a machine, we're seeing ASR or speech to text at work. I'm hopeful because this is huge for lowering barriers. You don't need literacy skills. And all of us hanging out in well-developed Western European city, a lot of people can't read. This could be due to cognitive challenges. This could be coming from a background where there's less literacy. I kind of don't care. What I do care about is people deserve access to this technology. And if we can remove literacy as a barrier and let people interact through speech, at least to me, that's so dazzlingly exciting. You don't need to use your hands, either because you don't have use of them now or you're doing something else with them. You can use speech technologies while probably not driving your car, please and thank you. I'm not sure about local laws. But while using equipment, machinery, while doing other things. And speaking requires less directed focus than writing. If I have to type something, I need a screen in my field of vision. I should probably almost definitely not do this while driving or operating machinery. But I could probably use speech technologies while chatting with y'all. And interactions with speech technologies mirror the ways many of us communicate with each other day to day. This isn't the main point, but the ability to talk to our computers is retro sci-fi magic. They're probably not going to love us back, but the brief opportunity to feel like they talk to us is pretty cool. And linguistic exclusion, so saying, hey, these speech technologies work, but not for everyone, has huge impacts. When we're seeing people come to the web for the first time, whether in speech or text, we're seeing people join us in unequal hardware, unequal connectivity, but we're also asking users to join us often in a second or third or in a language they don't primarily speak. At-risk languages, this is a thing linguists bang on about all the time, but languages die every day. And the languages that die are the languages that don't get used. The languages we use are the ones we include in our tooling. And accent and variant-based barriers to speech technologies mean that they develop additional barriers based on class and race and region. Speech technology isn't just voice assistants, but voice assistants are a fantastic sort of lens through which to see what works and what doesn't. How many languages there are and what's a language, what's a variant, is kind of the tabs versus spaces of linguistics. But there's definitely more than 7,000 languages in the world. Voice assistants work really, really well with about 20. I'd go ahead and gather that we've got more than 20 first language speakers of different languages here today. This means that the data sets that power them are coming from backgrounds where they underrepresent and lock out people of color, people from indigenous backgrounds, not just different language backgrounds. While I'm super excited about speech technologies and how hopeful they are, they're not being built for everybody right now. When we saw this diagram, I was pointing at all of the things I was excited about. One of the things I'm also excited about is this research that produced this diagram that I love is actually about the impact of gender and dialect and training size. Gender and dialect in the training data for Arabic automatic speech recognition. And this is broken because of the data sets. When we come back here and see that we've got this transcribed speech data that begins all of our processes for doing automatic speech recognition, that data not being there or not being included for these models to be trained kind of breaks a lot of things. Almost all of these data sets are proprietary, closed source, and they are expensive as hell. Often they're limited in demographic scope. If you gave me a project where I needed to collect 17 hours of Belgian French data right now, we're on a university campus. I'd probably go talk to younger students who are chill with casual work. And oftentimes when we do get regional languages, these are being collected by folks from outside the region who don't understand the language and are going to wind up with some weird data. I can talk to you about what we did, but in doing so, much less of a, hey, use this completely free and CC0 dataset pitch, but more of a, let's talk through the different aspects of the data and the different aspects of linguistic data that I'm really excited about. So what Common Voice did back in 2017 is start collecting speech data via a crowdsourced platform. The big thing I want to stress is this is not our data. We never add a language unless someone from that language community asks us, and we see ourselves as librarians of it. We release that data every quarter under a CC0 license because it, yeah, belongs to the people who made it. If you did want to collect your own data, let's kind of walk through how we did it and how we've been doing it. Somebody asks us to add a language. Right now we've got 131 languages on Common Voice, which doesn't really stack up to the 7,000 I was shouting about earlier. Because people are donating their voices on a website, we then ask people to help us localize the platform. If I asked you to donate your voice and I asked you to agree to the terms in a language you don't speak, that is exceedingly uncool. Because we're a red speech corpus, we also need copyright-free sentences for folks to come to the website to read in their home language. We launch a new language. We have a little bit of a remote party in the office. It's fine. People come and contribute their voices. Other people validate them because that data needs to be validated to be really valuable. And then because it's not our data, we just go ahead and kick it out into the world every quarter. If you thought, I want to do this, I want to go ahead and collect my own data, love it, love it, love it, do it. Let's walk through all the stuff you got to do. You've got to pick a license. This will absolutely show exactly how old I am, but Common Voice has gone for a CC0 license, which is the most YOLO license you could possibly source. It means that folks can package the data, resell the data, use it for whatever they want. We thought this was a really good fit for our project. The big thing I want to shout about for folks looking at speech data collection is this is not a good fit for every language community. We've talked to folks from indigenous language backgrounds saying, how do I keep big tech from accessing this? We say, fantastic, not by using a CC0 license. So really looking at where this data comes from. While I could not definitively speak to it, when we look at a lot of big pre-trained models these days,